When I was a teenager, there was a very popular comedian named Flip Wilson. Flip Wilson had multiple characters. One of his most famous statements was, "The devil made me do it." And he was hilarious. He had a lot of different roles that he could play. But that one really stuck with a lot of people, and it became a very common cultural response or retort to various situations. We blamed the devil for it. The devil made me do it. However, today I want to talk about something that I believe to be more accurate than that. And that is, my identity made me do it. My identity made me do it. We all want to improve ourselves in some ways. You know, that's common. This is a part of the natural order of human beings. And it's especially true this time of the year, at the beginning of a new year with New Year's resolutions. But it also occurs at other times of the year. You see ads for it on TV before the summertime. If you want to lose weight so you can fit into your bathing suit more attractively, so this pre-summer, I got to improve myself, I've got to lose some weight kind of thing goes on. Near the end of August or early September, which is a traditional time in our culture for people to go back to school. It's like, I got to go back to school. I got to do new things. I got to learn new things. Summer's over. It's time for me to become more aware of certain things. All of those are common examples of ways we attempt to improve ourselves. So, why do we sometimes succeed at making these improvements and sometimes we fail? There are various ways to say the same thing in answer to those questions. So, let me try a few of them. In some cases, our energetic blueprint has the changes available to us. They're in the blueprint, and then we can do those things. We can make those concepts, those improvements, those changes show up physically in the construction of our lives. But in other cases, those improvements are not in the blueprint. They're outside of what we believe to be true about ourselves. And consequently, it is much more difficult for us to make those changes. In other cases, it seems like there are natural forces that we've set in motion that are carrying us in a certain direction, I'll say downstream, but that we decided, I want improvements that go in an opposite direction, and we want to make those changes, and we want to try to go upstream. But the energy is taking us in one direction, and we're fighting it. So trying to swim upstream, particularly in a very, very strong current, which is simply the idea that we have practiced over and over again a certain way to see ourselves, and now we're trying against all of those currents that we've created to go in a different direction. And it's very difficult. We may not understand that if we want the effects, the results, right? We want to be less weight, we want to have more money, we want to be healthier, we want to be more loved, all those sorts of things. Those are the effects. And we may say, well, those are the results I want. But we first need to be engaged in the cause. Too often we just want the rewards without any kind of work involved in it, without any contribution of energy on our part in order to create the effects that we want. So trying to improve, trying to change your situation without an investment of energy, it's like we got some challenges ahead of us. Our consciousness, and I'll refer to that as the field of force that is around us, that contains images and beliefs and prejudices and about a bunch of different energy patterns that we've acquired over the course of our lives, are either in alignment with the improvements that we want to make or they're in conflict with what we want. So if we've got this whole mass of energy patterns that are pushing us in one direction, and we decide that we, because of something we've seen advertised, or we've had a conversation, or perhaps even we have this legitimate spark of inspiration, we're going to have to battle all these mountains of energies that we've previously put in place. We may say consciously that we want to change, we want to improve, while at the same time, we subconsciously want something else. We want something different. Now, it's well known that people say, change, change. Change is frightening. Change is different. Change is something that requires more energy than inertia. It requires more energy than the continuing with the momentum of whatever it is we're doing or not doing. So if we've got one part of us saying we want to go in one direction and one part of us saying, no, I don't, even if we don't know what that part of us is, that is, it's subconscious, it's going to be challenging for us to make these changes. And for the purposes of today's talk, I could say that our identity, a capital I, every time I use identity today, I'm going to use it with a capital I. Our identity allows us to do certain things, and our identity prevents us from doing other things. I believe this to be true. Health, or the lack of it, is an identity issue. Wealth or poverty is an identity issue. Confidence, or the lack of it, is an identity issue. Success, or the lack of it, is an identity issue. Loving relationships, or the lack of them, are an identity issue. Happiness or unhappiness is an identity issue. You start to see this pattern, and you probably could add other things that are identity issues. So, what is this thing I'm calling identity? You know, we probably could talk about that and study that and read about it for weeks and months and years. But simply put, our identity is the collection of our thoughts, our feelings, our words, our actions, our beliefs, our opinions, our fears, our hopes, our prejudices, our wisdom, our misunderstandings, etc., about who we are, about what we are and what we can become, about what we can do and what we can't do, what we can have and what we can't have, rules about life that life and our experiences have to follow now that we believe those rules to be true, and on and on. It's this huge collection or conglomeration of energy that steers us in a given direction. Our identity is a conscious collection of all those elements that I just described, and which we can be aware of, hence that's why they're called conscious. And we present certain identities, like an actor playing a role in a various play, and we're obviously acting in a lot of different plays, depending on what it is we're interacting with at any given moment. When we interact with a car, or a computer, or a friend, or a relative, or a stranger, we are taking on a different role based upon our identity. Our identity is going to feed us images that we can present as us in those various circumstances. And there are many facets of our identity. We're kind of like a multi-sided box, if you think of that. And I'm a fan of a 12-sided box because I use the image of the 12 worlds very frequently. So now we turn that box, we turn the side, and we show a particular facet. We show what we could consider and call a facade, depending on our conscious and subconscious beliefs about ourselves and others, life, God, and that situation. And we're going to turn that box and show a particular facet based upon two rules that I believe are always operational. We're going to be acting in our own self-interest based upon our level of awareness. We'll be acting in our own self-interest according to the level of our awareness, and then we turn the box simultaneously to fulfill that paradigm, that set of impulses. Rob Williams, he's the founder of Psych-K and he's an associate of Bruce Lipton, says in a video presentation that I've seen that the conscious mind processes 4,000 bits of information per second, while the subconscious mind processes 4 billion bits of information per second. If you divide 4,000 by 4 billion, you're going to get a really, really small number that represents the conscious mind's quantity of processing. And that number is 0.0001%. That's kind of little, right? That is kind of little. But that figure doesn't mean that the conscious mind is incredibly small and weak, and the subconscious is incredibly large and strong. That figure is talking about the quantity of information processed, the volume of it being processed, not the power of it. Here's an image for you. Imagine a school bus filled with children. You and your conscious mind are the driver of the bus. You get to decide on the direction and the distance you want to drive your vehicle. What about the passengers? What about the children in the bus? The children are like the content of our subconscious minds. Some content is happy and thoughtful, some impetuous, some eager to please, some angry that the direction you choose consciously is not the direction they want to go in. They don't want to go to school. They don't want to go in that direction. They want to do something else, something more fun. Some are depressed that their gratification has been prevented. They're not going to get what they want. Some are enthusiastic, adventurous, really looking forward to what they're about to discover. And some are terrified of what could happen during this journey and when they arrive at the destination. So, you're the bus driver. What are you going to do? What route are you going to take? How far are you going to drive? Before you answer those questions, let me make sure you understand something else about this scene. You are the bus driver. You are the bus, the vehicle. And you are every one of those passengers clamoring for what they want, fighting what they don't want. Now, you can answer those questions. What are you going to do? What route are you going to take to get to your goals? How far are you willing to go? These questions are not easy to answer. So, in case the first thought you had that came to mind when you heard those questions, I don't know. Let me suggest that you can use history to show you your patterns. Let me go back to the school bus metaphor to illustrate another set of concepts. You and I know that a bus is solid matter, right? It's made out of metal and rubber tires and plastic and glass and all kinds of stuff. A bus driver manages that matter using the steering wheel, door controls, opening and closing them so kids can get on and off, gas pedal to go faster, brake pedal to go slower, maybe a loudspeaker to communicate with the occupants, signals to alert other people outside of the vehicle that the bus is going to come to a stop, or the bus is going to make a left turn or a right turn, or it's going to slow down, so on. Inside that bus, as any real live bus driver will tell you, is a lot of energy. A lot. While the passengers are more or less solid matter, it's their energy bubbling over, seeking expression, one way or another, that is so dramatic. And if I'm talking to a parent, this is no surprise, this is not new news, that the idea of a child having unbelievable amounts of energy. You know, I think of this Ever-Ready battery commercial that keeps going and going. That's modeled after children. Somebody noticed children and went, ah, this is a good way to describe this battery that keeps going and going. People will be able to relate to that. So managing space is essential to the safety of the bus and to its occupants. Keeping order internally, right? Can't have kids running around and doing this and trying to grab the steering wheel, although metaphorically that's really what happens to us. And what we have to do also is to avoid external threats. You know, other vehicles, other cars, other trucks, other people, pedestrians and so on that are outside of the vehicle, outside of the space that we're trying to manage. Signaling turns and stops and slowing down with brakes, brake lights going on, alerts others to our intentions. And those things are standard safety procedures. That's how we manage the space within and around the vehicle. I know that the schedule that the driver is trying to follow is all about managing time, right? Kids go out to the bus stop because they expect to be picked up at a certain time, and that is all about our attempts to manage time. What time do people get picked up or get dropped off? Those things are usually well defined based upon the idea of getting kids to the school at a certain time so the school day can begin. It wouldn't make much sense to pick up a child at, say, 8 o'clock in the morning and then to get to school at the end of the day when school is over. That would be a really poor management of time. So now that I put these standard life processes that you and I do every single day, more or less effectively, that is, managing matter, solid stuff, managing energy, those thoughts and feelings and ideas that come to us, managing our space, managing time into perspective. Look at your life for clues to see how your identity either allows you, encourages you, or restrains you, or prevents you from handling matter, energy, space, and time. Look at the matter in your environment, your home, the rooms in your home, your car, your closet, your desk, your dresser, your tables, your garage, your drawers, all of that. And those conditions can tell you what your identity is relative to the management of matter. I'll use these labels. Are you attentive or negligent when it comes to managing matter? Are you orderly or are you chaotic? Are you selective or impulsive in the acquisition and holding on to solid stuff? Are you respectful or disrespectful to the matter that you've acquired? Are you grateful for what you have or are you minimizing that you don't have enough? The thoughts we think, the feelings we feel, the words we think and speak to ourselves and to others, and the actions we take and don't take are the ones that dictate the conditions in our lives. If we can consciously decide on what we want to experience with regard to matter, with regard to bringing order to the clamoring of these unruly aspects of our identity, we're going to have different experiences. No sane bus driver would stop the vehicle and beat an unruly child who had lost control of himself. It's known that a sane, calm, patient bus driver will bring a sense of calm and patience and sanity to their buses and their passengers. It's as if it's contagious. So it's important for that driver to be of a certain energy, and then that is communicated consciously and subconsciously, respectfully, to the passengers. Said another way, a purposeful, positive, strong, conscious mind that decides on the direction and distance for a goal can bring the subconscious into alignment. Like children with limited awareness of cause and effect, the subconscious mind is this kind of a jigsaw puzzle of impressions seeking to be recognized and accepted as existing. Not necessarily demanding complete control, but really recognize that I exist. You can do that with a fear, and all of a sudden it becomes calmer because we acknowledged it. We don't have to take it and hand over the steering wheel of our vehicle to it. Here, fear, you be in charge. You drive. You slam on the brakes. You veer left or right. We don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. These same considerations pertain to our life's conditions to see how our identities have managed energy, our relationships with our body, how about our relationships with our family, with our friends, with our thoughts, with our feelings, and with our words that we think and speak to ourselves and others. We can really look at that set of patterns and we can recognize, whoops, I've got some work to do in this area. And I could say ditto with space and ditto with our time. We're the conscious driver. We're going to be the ones directing our lives. Well, perhaps. Ideally, that's the way it does work. We decide on distance and direction. We decide on the goal. And align the energy of our subconscious mind, get all of that energy going in the same direction, so now there's harmony in our vehicle, and we're moving forward. So we've got our conscious identity, making decisions about where we're going and why, and then we align our subconscious identities, all of these impulses that I've described before, all of these components and images and beliefs and fears and hopes and so on, all of those can come into alignment. And we can be driving down the road with much less resistance, much less struggle, much less conflict. Because if we don't, we're going to be noticing what most people do notice when they set New Year's resolutions. They decide on a distance and direction, I want to do fill in the blank, and then they go in the opposite direction. They slam on the brakes. They come to a complete halt, and they refuse to pursue that anymore. And they go like, wow, same as last year, and the year before, and the year before that. What's up with that? What's up with that is we haven't brought into harmony, into alignment, these various aspects of our identity. If we allow these impulsive and compulsive grabbing of the steering wheel by these subconscious beliefs and images and give up control of distance and direction, not the process, not how to get there, that's a whole different ball game. We can decide on that, but the power that directs us is something beyond our conscious. We're really interested in aligning the driver, the vehicle, and the passengers, our content. We can cleanse our consciousness, and that's an important thing to do. And I'm not talking about jettisoning them. I'm not talking about throwing unruly kids out of the bus and refusing to deal with them. Unruliness is a lack of awareness. Our fears are a lack of awareness. Our anger is a lack of awareness. And you go, but they're part of my identity. Yes, because we've practiced them, we've learned them from other people, somebody else has delivered that information to us that said, this is how you get what you want. You get angry, you rage, you be a victim, you cry, you bully. They're approaches, but they're not the effective approaches. We can cleanse our consciousness of those tendencies. We can align the conscious and the subconscious parts of identity so we are the cause of the improvements that we seek. We simply need to take responsibility for those conscious decisions. And then we reach out to the ultimate GPS, divine consciousness, so we can stay on course. We make a decision, we take action, and then we use our emotions to reinforce that. Our real identity is the one that we're going to be discovering in this process. It's not the impulsive. It's not that, I've got to have what I want when I want it. It's not that craving for instant gratification. It's not that lower vibration, shameful or apathetic or despairing or grief-filled or fear-filled or anger-filled person. And it's not even the pride-filled when we start to discover that we're developing a level of effectiveness. It is this higher vibration us that is connected to the source of our being. That is our identity. And perhaps in this case, not only is the capital I the lead letter in that word, but perhaps every single letter is capitalized. Our identity as an expression of divine consciousness. When we become aware of that, all kinds of wonderful things can happen to us, to people in our environment, to all the contents of our minds and our hearts and our relationships. That's what we want. Then we could say, my identity made me do it, and we'll be proud and pleased and grateful to be making that statement. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in the book Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.